Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Freedom at Work, the leadership strategy for transforming your life, your organization, and our world by Tracy Fenton. Narrated by Tracy Fenton. Note, this book is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information about leadership and professional development. Neither the author nor the publisher is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services by publishing this book. If any such assistance is required, the services of a qualified financial professional should be sought. The author and publisher will not be responsible for any liability, loss, or risk incurred as a result of the use and application of any information contained in this book. For those who stand for, fight for, and love freedom. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Christ Jesus. Citizens of the world, accept the glorious liberty of the children of God and be free. This is your divine right. Mary Baker Eddy. I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery. Thomas Jefferson. Libertas perfundit omnia luce. Freedom will flood all things with light. Latin proverb. Author's note. This book is based on over two decades of inspiring and rewarding work my team and I have done with top CEOs, leaders, teams, and organizations worldwide. It has been a tremendous honor to work with and learn from them. The company stories and practices described in these pages are drawn from 50 remarkable World Blue Certified Freedom-Centered Organizations, selected from nearly 200 worldwide. Unless otherwise noted, the stories are based on information provided directly by those organizations, as well as personal interviews I conducted with leaders, often on location. In most cases, I refer to CEOs and various leaders by their first names only, and I've avoided naming the organizations. This was intentional. These organizations deserve so much credit for the creativity they have shown in the way they have applied freedom at work. However, my goal is for you to read these timeless stories and transformational practices and imagine how you could adapt freedom at work within your own team or organization. I have provided some contextual information about these organizations so you can understand that they are substantial and successful organizations from around the world. However, I do not want you to feel limited in applying these ideas and practices simply because their industry, size, or scope may not be the same as yours. I would not want you to think, well, that could work for them, but it couldn't work for us. Because more than likely, it can. If you'd like to find out more, the complete list of World Blue Certified Freedom-Centered Organizations can be found at www.worldblue.com. Welcome to Freedom at Work. Introduction. Our unalterable resolution should be to be free. Samuel Adams. On June 15, 1215, beneath the trees of Runnymede, by the lush green banks of the River Thames, stood a council of 25 deeply frustrated barons who were fed up with King John's mismanagement, poor decision-making, and tyrannical leadership. On that historic day in England, they had the king sign a peace treaty known as Magna Carta, or Great Charter, limiting his powers and creating a year zero in humanity's struggle for freedom and democracy. Echoes of this pivotal document, along with inspiration gleaned from older Turkish, Greek, and Roman examples, biblical principles, and the Native American Iroquois model of democracy would later influence the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, establishing the most powerful and longest-running democratic constitutional republic in the world, the United States of America. Such movements for freedom, enshrined in these most cherished and sacred documents, would tap into a universal truth, humankind's divine right to be free. In the words of U.S. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, "The democratic aspiration is no mere recent phase in human history. It is human history. It permeated the ancient life of early peoples. It blazed anew in the Middle Ages. It was written in the Magna Carta." And yet, despite the fact that the democratic aspiration, as Roosevelt put it, is thousands of years old, the true promise of democracy has not yet penetrated where it can make the most difference in our daily lives, namely in the way we work. Nearly 800 years after the Barons' triumph at Runnymede, Kent was confronted with the biggest leadership challenge of his life. The Harvard MBA had just agreed to turn around a large healthcare company that was anything but healthy itself. He was about to impact thousands of customers, shareholders, and employees and their families all over the world. Little did he know then that the organization would one day become a thriving Fortune 500 company, and he and the organization would become a case study of exemplary leadership for top business schools. Yet, at that point, the company's future was anything but guaranteed. They were rapidly losing cash, teetering on the edge of bankruptcy, and under investigation by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Shareholders were suing. Morale was at an all-time low. Executives were either being fired or quitting. As Kent later shared, "If a single bank had asked for a single dollar, the company might have gone under. It was a brutally negative place. People were angry and scared." He had been hired to lead everyone out of the fear and chaos, but how would he do it? Most leaders, when faced with circumstances that must be turned around, resort to a top-down, fear and control style of leadership that can leave carnage and resentment in its wake. This style may be effective in the short term, but hardly ever wins the long game. Faced with worry, stress, and expectations of success, many leaders can't mentally pivot out of their own fears to think from a different leadership paradigm altogether. Despite the pressure to conform to a tyrannical, slash-and-burn leadership style typical of most turnaround CEOs, Kent had a different philosophy altogether. He envisioned an organization filled not with dejected, traumatized, and demoralized employees who were just mentally renting space each day, but with engaged, joyous, and purposeful citizens. To build this democratic community first and a company second, as he later explained it, he himself would have to resist the pull towards centralized leadership. He could only realize this vision if he led in a very different way, if he led democratically. But would his employees follow? When Kent announced his vision for how he wanted to turn the company around, about a third of its leaders and employees thought the idea was ridiculous and that it would take a Herculean effort just to make payroll that month. Another third thought it was a nice idea, but that a democratic leadership style would eventually buckle under the severity of the problems they faced. "I would go back to my hotel room at night in those early days and cry, wondering if I was on the right path," the CEO would later share at his annual leadership event. What exactly is this democratic leadership style Kent hoped to implement? The term democracy comes from the Greek words demos, the people, and kratein, to rule. The essence of democracy is that we, the people, have the unalienable right and responsibility of self-government, not the state, an oligarchy, a dictatorship, or a monarchy. A democratic leadership style, which is applicable to every area of life where leadership is needed, is exactly what Kent wanted to use to turn the company around. He believed that by tapping into the spirit of freedom inside each employee and leader, he could activate a remarkable turnaround from the inside out. Kent also knew what many of us inherently understand, that top-down, fear-based leadership, whether used centuries ago or today, is highly dependent on one or a few individuals' agendas, personalities, whims, moods, intellect, and shortcomings. Fear-based leadership, in all its forms, is not only an inadequate leadership style for leading in a highly complex circumstances, it is also highly unpredictable and often dangerous, costing money and even lives. There's a reason why the greatest thinkers in human history, to whom we turn for eternal guidance, weren't advocates for the monarchical, tyrannical, or dictatorial control of many by one. They had the wisdom to understand that democratic leadership was a more intelligent system of leadership. It was more just, humane, and moral. It was an act of love toward our fellow human beings. It took the long view. A democratic style of leadership has been responsible for more ingenuity, prosperity, happiness, and success in human history than any other style of leadership, because a democratic style of leadership taps into the core idea that we are made to be free. Now, we value democracy. We understand that nations are formed by it. We're happy to live in freedom, if we do. But the problem is, most of us don't really understand what democracy is, why it's the most effective style of leadership, and how to actually practice it. And if you don't understand it, then you certainly can't choose to lead with it. And ultimately, you can't reap all of the benefits it has to offer. My personal journey to discovering the power of democracy began back in the fall of my senior year of college. Our college president had selected me to be the director of our prestigious student-run public affairs conference. I asked my ambitious student team to come up with a topic for the event that would be out of the box, forward-thinking, and globally aware. One fall day, after months of research, they came back to me and proposed that the theme of the conference should be democracy. As I stood in the college president's boardroom, my jaw dropped in disbelief. Democracy means voting, and old men in politics in Washington, D.C., I said to them, stunned. Privately, I thought, what part of forward thinking do they not understand? They asked me to hear them out, so I listened. They explained to me that democracy wasn't just a political concept per se, but a way of leading and organizing people so that they could release their full potential, promise, and purpose. And when I heard that, something clicked for me. I had a long-held desire to help people unleash their greatness. This desire took root at a very young age, inspired by my spiritual upbringing and influenced by my family. I had a golden childhood, growing up in beautiful Cedar Rapids, Iowa, a mid-sized family town in the U.S. Midwest. I was blessed with two loving parents, my mother, an elementary school teacher, and my father, who taught deaf high school students. Around our dinner table, my mother would talk about the lesson plan she was creating on character education for fellow teachers in her school district. My father, after leaving teaching when I was a young teenager, became an entrepreneur, building his own financial planning and insurance company. He was constantly listening to leadership and motivational tapes whenever he drove me to my various extracurricular activities. My inner spiritual sense of self-worth and purpose was further reinforced by the sounds of Brian Tracy and Zig Ziglar playing each day in the car. Perhaps inspired by their example, I have a distinct memory of counseling my fellow fourth-grade students one-on-one on the playground during recess about how to overcome their fears and live to their fullest potential while everyone else played kickball. I was a very joyous and trusting kid, focused on playing my flute and marching band and performing in our top-rated show choir, attending dance lessons, and participating in various athletic activities rather than anything having to do with the wider world or politics, both of which we rarely, if ever, discussed in my home. But the divine hand always has a plan for each one of us, regardless of our early beginnings. And I believe the symbols and signs can often be found around us. It was only while writing this book that I discovered some of these powerful foreshadowings. For example, I grew up on Mason Drive. George Mason was a principal author of the Virginia Declaration of Rights, which had a major influence on the United States Bill of Rights. Historians deem him a father of that document. Hiawatha, a suburb of my hometown, was named after the Native American who co-founded the Iroquois Confederacy, one of the oldest participatory democracies in the world. Elements of their great law of peace inspired our founding fathers' writing of the U.S. Constitution, a fact finally acknowledged by the U.S. Congress in 1988. Another suburb, Solon, was named for one of the founders of Greek democracy. The town of Fairfax, which was just a few miles down the road from my home, was named after Thomas Fairfax, 6th Lord of Fairfax of Cameron in England. He was one of George Washington's key mentors and the individual for whom Fairfax County, Virginia, where I lived for a time while writing this book, was named. Fairfax County is also where Mount Vernon, President George Washington's estate, is located. And interestingly, Mount Vernon, Iowa, is located just 20 minutes from my childhood home. Additionally, as I researched this book, I discovered I had several family members who fought for freedom in the American Revolution. My aunt also discovered that we were related to the distinguished Reuben Eaton Fenton. He was close friends with Abraham Lincoln and was also instrumental in founding the Republican Party, which was committed to abolishing slavery. Fenton was the governor of New York as well as a congressman, and later a senator of the state. He had a reputation of high integrity and a deep and passionate commitment to freedom and democracy. Upon his passing, his funeral was said to have been attended by the greatest number of people of any funeral ever held in Jamestown. Furthermore, I discovered that on my mother's side, we were also related to King John of England. Yes, the same king who signed the Magna Carta. By the time I reached college, after graduating from the aptly named Jefferson High School, I had been a student of leadership 4 years. With the possibility of a conference on democracy, however, I started to see how a democratic style of leadership created the conditions where individuals could learn self-government, develop a deeper sense of self-worth, and rise to their full leadership potential. So I said yes to its theme being on democratic leadership and how it could be applied in everything from schools to nonprofits, small to large companies. This decision changed my life. I shifted my undergraduate thesis to be about discovering the principles of democracy, and later focused my graduate studies in this area as well. I researched what democratic leadership is and what it isn't. I studied classical democratic thought and read everything I could on democracy, from the Romans to the Greeks, the Native Americans to the founding fathers of the United States, religious texts, as well as leading philosophers and contemporary thinkers. I studied democracy in multiple spheres of life, such as schools and businesses, urban planning and music and the arts, and identified the core democratic principles that kept coming up. I traveled throughout democratic and undemocratic countries in North and South America, Europe, Asia, and Africa, interviewing dozens of practitioners of democracy about what they believed constituted the fundamental principles of democracy. And I attended multiple global forums and conferences devoted to exploring democracy and its various practices. I was looking for the core causal principles that must be present to create a democratic system. After a decade of research, 10 foundational principles of organizational democracy emerged. The world blew 10 principles of organizational democracy. Stage 1, start. Principle 1, purpose and vision. Purpose and vision are at work when each individual and the organization know their reason for being and have a sense of intentional direction. Principle 2, integrity. Integrity is at work when each individual and the organization uphold high moral and ethical principles. Principle 3, dialogue and listening. Dialogue and listening are at work when each individual listens and engages in conversation in a way that deepens meaning and connection. Principle 4, transparency. Transparency is at work when ideas and information are openly and responsibly shared. Stage 2, scale. Principle 5, accountability. Accountability is at work when each individual and the organization are responsible to each other for their actions. Principle 6, decentralization. Decentralization is at work when power is appropriately shared throughout an organization. Principle 7, individual and collective. The individual and the collective are at work when the rights of both are valued and respected. Stage 3, sustain. Principle 8, choice. Choice is at work when each individual chooses between different possibilities. Principle 9, fairness and dignity. Fairness and dignity are at work when each individual is treated justly and impartially, and is recognized for their inherent worth. Principle 10, reflection and evaluation. Reflection and evaluation are at work when each individual and the organization are committed to continuous feedback and growth. All 10 principles must be present for a system to be distinctly democratic. Other principles, such as ownership, trust, justice, and empowerment, came up again and again in my research, but it became clear that they are actually the results of democracy, not its cause. In other words, if they didn't help create a democratic leadership and organizational system, but were instead outcomes of it, they weren't foundational principles. So that's why they didn't make the list. Of course, democratic leadership is not new. Many ancient and contemporary thinkers, whom I highly respect, have written about freedom and organizational democracy. My goal is not to repackage what has been written before. To the best of my knowledge, no one has clearly articulated the exact principles of democracy in this way. Rather, my express goal is to help you understand with confidence and conviction what the 10 principles of democracy actually are, so you can use them to build more democratic organizations and ultimately help build a more democratic world. By understanding these principles, I hope to make democratic leadership even clearer and therefore easier for you to implement in your life, team, or organization. In the following pages, we will take an exciting, in-depth look at these principles and how, as a leader, you can use them to solve your leadership and organizational challenges in unexpected and encouraging ways. In the spring of my last quarter of college, I was so inspired by what I was discovering about the relationship between leadership and democracy that I founded World Blue. We are a global leadership company teaching the mindset, leadership skills, and organizational design of freedom at work to members worldwide. We're called World Blue because blue is widely recognized as the color of freedom. And our vision is to see a world where everyone can live, lead, and work in freedom rather than fear. Our name captures our vision in a word. In the years since we were founded, my team and I have worked with thousands of CEOs and top leaders in over 100 countries and in companies ranging from small organizations to Fortune 500s, such as the WD-40 Company, Zappos, Mindvalley, DaVita, Pandora, Hulu, GE Aviation Durham, Achievers, Menlo Innovations, Podio, Rev Asia, and HCL Technologies. I have also had the privilege of speaking to leaders around the world at entities such as Harvard, Yale, the U.S. Naval Academy, the University of Southern California, and South by Southwest. It seems that the concept of democratic leadership, while thousands of years old, is just as fresh and timely today as it was when my peers and I organized that student conference. The journey of working with these top leaders and organizations over the past two decades has been deeply educational and fulfilling, and it's why I'm so excited to share their stories with you. When I first started this work, I thought a leader could transform their team or organization's culture simply by focusing on the design of the organization's systems and processes. But after researching, observing, and working with top leaders and their organizations worldwide, I discovered there was more to it. Leading from a spirit of freedom rather than fear begins with an entirely different mindset and requires thoroughly different leadership skills before a leader is ready to focus on their team or organization's design. This is how the Freedom at Work leadership model came to life. The model is based on three key pillars. 1. Freedom-centered mindset. A freedom-centered mindset lays the foundation for freedom at work. It is about making better decisions, being more creative, overcoming limitations, and imagining new possibilities from a mindset of freedom rather than fear. What does this mean for a leader and their team or organization? Action rather than analysis paralysis, alignment rather than distrust, and personal accountability rather than victimhood, all translating into forward progress. In part two of this book, I'll be teaching you a 5-step practice to shift your mindset instantly from fear to freedom, and then how to help others on your team do the same. 2. Freedom-centered leadership. Freedom-centered leadership is about leading yourself and others with skills that enhance freedom with personal accountability, rather than fear and control. There are three core attributes of freedom-centered leadership: power, love, and Ubuntu. And these develop a leader's ability to self-govern, have high self-worth, and cultivate self-knowledge. These three areas get at the root issues that cause most leadership success or failure. You'll learn about this in part 3. 3. Freedom-centered design. Freedom-centered design.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?